They were upset about Mrs. Kramer, more than about Kramer himself.
I nodded. Yeah, maybe they liked her.
They must have liked Kramer, too.
Nah, he's just a tactical problem for them. It's an unsentimental business up there at their level. They hitched themselves to him, and now he's dead, and they're worrying about where that leaves them.
Ready for promotion, maybe.
Maybe, I said. But if Kramer turns out to be an embarrassment, they could go down with him.
Then they should be reassured. You promised him a cover-up.
There was something prim in her voice, like she was suggesting I shouldn't have promised them any such thing. We protect the army, Summer, I said, like family. That's what we're for. Then I paused. But did you notice they didn't shut up after that? They should have taken the hint. Cover-up requested, cover-up promised. Asked and answered, mission accomplished.
They wanted to know where his stuff was.
Yes, I said. They did. And you know what that means? It means they're looking for Kramer's briefcase, too. Because of the agenda. Kramer's copy is the only one still outside of their direct control. They came down here to check if I had it. Summer looked in the direction their car had gone. I could still smell its exhaust in the air, an acid tang from the catalyst. How do civilian medics work? I asked her. Suppose you're my wife and I go down with a heart attack. What do you do?
I call 911.
And then what happens?
The ambulance shows up, takes you to the emergency room.
And let's say I'm DOA when I get there. Where would you be?
I would have ridden to the hospital with you.
And where would my briefcase be?
At home, she said, wherever you left it.
Then she paused.
What? You think someone went to Mrs. Kramer's house last night looking for the briefcase?
It's a plausible sequence, I said. Someone hears that he's dead from a heart attack, assumes he was pronounced in the ambulance or the emergency room, assumes whoever he was with would have accompanied him, goes down there expecting to find an empty house with a briefcase in it.
But he was never there.
It was a reasonable first try.
Well, you think it was Vassil and Kuma?
I said nothing.
Oh, that's crazy,
Summer said.
They don't look the type.
Yeah, don't let looks fool you. They're Armored Branch. They've trained all their lives to roll right over anything that gets in their way. But I don't think the timing works for them. Let's say Garber called 12 Corps in Germany at 12:15 earliest. Then let's say 12 Corps called a hotel back here in the States at 12:30 earliest. Green Valley is 70 minutes from D.C., and Mrs. Kramer died at 2 o'clock. That would have given them a 20-minute margin to react, maximum. They were just in from the airport, so they didn't have a car with them, and it would have taken time to get hold of one. And they certainly didn't have a crowbar with them. Nobody travels with a crowbar in their luggage just in case. And I doubt if the Home Depot was open after midnight on New Year's Eve.
So someone else is out there looking?
We need to find that agenda, I said. We need to nail this thing down. I sent Summer away to do three things. First, list all female personnel at Fort Byrd with access to their own Humvees. And second, list any of them who might have met Kramer at Fort Irwin in California. And third, contact the Jefferson Hotel in D.C. and get Vassil and Coomer's exact check-in and check-out times, plus details of all their incoming and outgoing phone calls. I went back to my office and filed the note from Garber and spread the note from my brother on the blotter and dialed the number. He picked up on the first ring. Hey, Joe, I said. Jack? What?
I got a call.
Who from?
Mom's doctor, he said.
About what?
She's dying.
I hung up with Joe and called Garber's office. He wasn't in. So I left a message detailing my travel plans and saying I'd be out for 72 hours. I didn't give a reason. Then I hung up again and sat at my desk, numb. 5 minutes later, Summer came in. She had a sheaf of motor pool paper with her. I guess she planned on compiling her Humvee list there and then, right in front of me. I have to go to Paris, I said.
Paris, Texas? She said. Or Paris, Kentucky, or Paris, Tennessee?
Paris, France, I said.
Why?
My mother's sick.
Your mother lives in France?
Paris, I said.
Why?
Because she's French.
Is it serious?
Being French?
No, whatever she's sick with.
I shrugged. I don't really know, but I think so.
I'm very sorry.
I need a car, I said. I need to get to Dulles right now.
I'll drive you, she said. I like driving.
She left the paperwork on my desk and went to retrieve the Chevrolet we'd used before. I went to my quarters and packed an army duffel with one of everything from my closet. Then I put on my long coat. It was cold, and I didn't expect Europe was going to be any warmer. Not in early January. Summer brought the car to my door. She kept it at 30 until we were off the post. Then she lit it up like a rocket and headed north. She was quiet for a spell. She was thinking. Her eyelids were moving.
We should tell the Green Valley cops, she said, if we think Ms. Kramer was killed because of the briefcase.
I shook my head. Telling them won't bring her back, and if she was killed because of the briefcase, we'll find whoever did it from our end.
What do you want me to do while you're gone?
Work the lists, I said. Check the gate log. Find the woman. Find the briefcase. Put the agenda in a very safe place. Then check on who Vassil and Coomer called from the hotel. Maybe they sent an errand boy out into the night.
You think that's possible?
Anything's possible.
But they didn't know where Kramer was.
That's why they tried the wrong place.
Who would they have sent?
Bound to be someone who has their interests close to his heart.
Okay,
she said. And find out who was driving him just now.
Okay,
she said. We didn't speak again. All the way to Dulles. I met my brother Joe in the line at the Air France ticket desk. He'd booked seats for both of us on the first morning flight. Now he was lining up to pay for them. I hadn't seen him for more than 3 years. The last time we'd been together was at our father's funeral. Since then, we'd gone our separate ways. Good morning, little brother, he said. He was wearing an overcoat and a suit and a tie, and he looked pretty good in them. He was 2 years older than me, and he always had been, and he always would be. As a kid, I used to study him and think, that's how I'll look when I grow up. Now I found myself doing it again. From a distance, we could have been mistaken for each other. Standing side by side, it was obvious that he was an inch taller and a little slighter than me, but mostly it was obvious that he was a little older than me. It looked like we'd started out together, but he'd seen the future first, and it had aged him and worn him down. How are you, Joe? I said. Can't complain. Busy? Like you wouldn't believe. I nodded and said nothing. Truth is, I didn't know exactly what he did for a living. He'd probably told me. It wasn't a national secret or anything. It was something to do with the Treasury Department. He had probably told me all the details, and I probably hadn't listened. Now it just seemed too late to ask. You were in Panama, he said. Operation Just Cause, right? Yeah, Operation Just Because, I said. That's what we called it. Just because what? Just because we could. Just because we all had to have something to do. Just because we got a new commander-in-chief who wants to look tough. Is it going well? It's like Notre Dame against the Tumble Tots. How else is it going to go? You got Noriega yet? Not yet. So why'd they post you back here? We took 27,000 guys, I said. It wasn't down to me personally. He smiled briefly. And then got that narrow-eyed look I remembered from childhood. It meant he was figuring out some pedantic and convoluted line of reasoning. But we got to the head of the line before he had time to tell me about it. He took out his credit card and paid for the flights. Maybe he expected me to pay him back for mine. Maybe he didn't. He didn't make it clear either way. "Let's get coffee now," he said. He was probably the only other human on the planet who liked coffee as much as I did. He started drinking it when he was 6. I copied him immediately. I was 4. Neither of us has stopped since. The Reacher brothers' need for caffeine makes heroin addiction look like an amusing little take-it-or-leave-it sideline. We found a place with a W-shaped counter snaking through it. It was 3/4 empty. It was harshly lit with fluorescent tubes, and the vinyl on the stools was sticky. We sat side by side and rested our forearms on the counter in the universal pose of early morning travelers everywhere. A guy in an apron put mugs in front of us without asking. Then he filled them with coffee from a flask. The coffee smelled fresh. The place was changing over from the all-night service to the breakfast menu. I could hear eggs frying. "What happened in Panama?" Joe asked. "To me?" I said. "Nothing." "What were your orders there?"
"Supervision."
"Of what?"
"Of the process," I said.
"The Noriega thing is supposed to look judicial. He's supposed to stand trial here in the States. So we're supposed to grab him up with some kind of formality. Some way that will look acceptable when we get him in a courtroom."
"You were going to read him his Miranda rights?"
"Well, not exactly, but it had to be better than some cowboy thing."
"Did you screw up?"
"I don't think so."
"Who replaced you?"
"Some other guy."
"Rank?"
"Same," I said.
"A rising star?"
I sipped my coffee, shook my head. I never met him before, but he seemed like a bit of an asshole to me. Joe nodded and picked up his mug, said nothing.
"What?" I said.
"Bird's not a small post," he said, "but it's not real big either, right? What are you working on?"
"Right now, some 2-star died and I can't find his briefcase."
"Homicide?"
I shook my head. "Heart attack."
"When?"
"Last night."
"After you got there?"
I said nothing.
"Are you sure you didn't screw up?" Joe said.
"I don't think so," I said again.
"So why'd they pull you out? One day you're supervising the Noriega process, and the next day you're in North Carolina with nothing to do? And you'd still have nothing to do if the general hadn't died."
"I got orders," I said. "You know how it is. You have to assume they know what they're doing."
"Who signed the orders?"
"I don't know."
"You should find out. Find out who wanted you at Bird badly enough to pull you out of Panama and replace you with an asshole. And you should find out why."
The guy in the apron refilled our mugs, shoved plastic menus in front of us.
"Eggs," Joe said. "Over well. Bacon. Toast."
"Pancakes," I said. "Egg on the top, bacon on the side. Plenty of syrup."
The guy took the menus back and went away, and Joe turned around on his stool and sat back, too, with his legs stretched way out into the aisle.
"What exactly did her doctor say?" I asked him.
He shrugged.
"Not very much. No details, no diagnosis, no real information. European doctors aren't very good with bad news. They hedge around it all the time. Plus, there's a privacy issue, obviously.
But we're headed over there for a reason."
He nodded.
"He suggested we might want to come, and then he hinted that sooner might be better than later."
"What's she saying?"
"That it's a lot of fuss about nothing, but that we're always welcome to visit."
We finished our breakfast and I paid for it. Then Joe gave me my ticket, like a transaction. I was sure he earned more than me, but probably not enough to make an airline ticket proportional to a plate of eggs and bacon with toast on the side. But I took the deal. We got off our stools and got our bearings and headed for the check-in counter.
"Take your coat off," he said.
"Why?"
"I want the clerk to see your medal ribbons," he said. "Military action going on overseas, we might get an upgrade."
"It's Air France," I said. "France isn't even a military member of NATO."
"The check-in clerk will be American," he said. "Try it."
I shrugged out of my coat, folded it over my arm, and walked sideways so the left of my chest stuck out forward. Okay now, I said. Perfect, he said, and smiled. I smiled back. Left to right on the top row, I wear the Silver Star, the Defense Superior Service Medal, and the Legion of Merit. Second row has the Soldier's Medal, the Bronze Star, and my Purple Heart. The bottom two rows are junk awards. I won all the good stuff purely by accident, and none of it means very much to me. Using it to get an upgrade out of an airline clerk is about what it's good for. But Joe liked the top two rows.